This morning, America's first news starts right after this.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Deadly accident on a New Mexico interstate. Good morning. I'm Mike Gavin, in for Gordon Deal, along with Rasa Kay, subbing for Jennifer Koshenko. It's Friday, the final day of August 2018, and here's what we have for you this hour.
A semi-truck collided head-on with a packed Greyhound bus in New Mexico yesterday, killing at least seven and injuring dozens.
President Trump says he's canceling scheduled pay raises for most federal employees for next year, citing budget concerns.
Former Vice President Joe Biden was among those paying tribute to the late Senator John McCain at a service held in Arizona, with more tributes on the way in D.C. today and tomorrow.
And why already small airline bathrooms are becoming even more of a tight squeeze.
As more new airplanes have been delivered with newer slim labs, if you will, shrinking the bathroom can save about 7 inches of space or so. So to fit more seats in, airlines are squeezing everything they can down.
Wall Street Journal airline columnist Scott McCartney on how passengers are coping with ever more cramped lavatories. More on that later in the hour. Officials say at least seven people have been killed and scores have been injured in northwestern New Mexico after a tractor trailer crashed head-on with a nearly packed Greyhound bus, and that number is expected to rise. Most of the 49 people on the bus, including adults and children, were taken to area hospitals with different degrees of injuries. State police say the driver of the truck sustained injuries that were not life-threatening. The horrific scene began at around 12:30 p.m. when a semi-truck was traveling eastbound along Interstate 40 in McKinley County, and blew a tire. The driver lost control of the vehicle, which crossed the median and struck the westbound bus. One witness said the accident was a complete catastrophe with skid marks on the side of the road.
People trying to climb out of the windows of the bus. There was people on scene that were bystanders that were trying to help. People getting ladders out of their truck to get up to the windows.
According to Greyhound, the Los Angeles-bound bus had originally departed from St. Louis and had just made a stop in Albuquerque prior to the crash. The National Transportation Safety Board said it was sending 10 investigators to the site. President Trump announced yesterday that he was canceling pay raises for most federal employees that had been set to go into effect in January, citing budget concerns. In a letter to House and Senate leaders, Mr. Trump wrote that he decided across-the-board pay raises as well as locality pay raises for civilian federal workers in 2019 would be frozen. More from this morning's Dave Duncan.
In the letter, President Trump said a 25.7% pay raise for localities as well as a 2.1% pay increase for across-the-board pay, both scheduled for January 2019, would add billions to the federal deficit. Specifically, he pointed to the scheduled locality pay raise costing $25 billion. The move comes just 9 months after the president signed his $1.5 trillion tax cut bill into law and 5 months after he signed a mammoth $1.3 trillion spending bill. The combined effect of both bills is expected to send the government's budget deficit toward the $1 trillion mark next year, according to an analysis by the Congressional Budget Office. Mike?
Thanks, Dave. Congress is currently debating a proposal for a slightly lower 1.9% across-the-board raise to be included in a funding bill that would require President Trump's signature to keep most government functions operating past September. Late Republican Senator John McCain was eulogized from across America's political divide by Democratic former Vice President Joe Biden, who hailed his longtime Senate colleague as a brother and beacon of bipartisanship. Biden paid tribute to the two-time Republican presidential candidate who died on Saturday from brain cancer at age 81 during a 90-minute memorial service at North Phoenix Baptist Church, the latest in a string of commemorative salutes to the Vietnam War hero and venerable politician.
It's always about basic values, John. Fairness, honesty, dignity, respect, giving hate no safe harbor, leaving no one behind, and understanding that as Americans, we're part of something much bigger than ourselves.
Biden also invoked the 2015 death of his own son, Beau, from brain cancer, and that of his first wife and infant daughter in a 1972 auto accident in offering words of sympathy to McCain's loved ones. At the service's end, McCain's coffin was taken out of the church to a recording of Frank Sinatra's My Way. It was then taken to the airport for a flight to Washington, McCain's last from Arizona. The memorial came a day after thousands of admirers waited in line for hours in the blazing Arizona sun and triple-digit heat to pay final respects as McCain's flag-draped coffin lay in state in the Arizona Capitol Rotunda. Senator McCain will be honored at the U.S. Capitol today and tomorrow and at two memorial services. Speakers will include two former presidents, George W. Bush and Barack Obama, and current Vice President Mike Pence. It's 11 minutes now after the hour. You're listening to This Morning, America's First News. Gordon Deals off. I'm Mike Gavin. Gordon will return on Monday. Well, the surprise nomination of the progressive African-American mayor of Tallahassee to run against an unabashed ally of President Trump for governor of Florida has set up a 10-week matchup of political polar opposites. And according to Wall Street Journal, politics reporter Reed Epstein could be a major test of both parties' bases in a swing state narrowly won by Trump in 2016. Reed joins us now from D.C. to explain. Reed, why don't you start by telling us a little bit about surprise nominee Andrew Gillum.
Andrew Gillum is the mayor of Tallahassee. He is a young African-American progressive. He was a big Hillary Clinton surrogate in 2016, but his politics were much more in line with Bernie Sanders' movement. He wound up being endorsed by the Vermont senator, and a lot of the progressive groups that made up the Bernie coalition in 2016 were behind him. He won the Democratic nomination even in a five-way field, even though he spent far, far less than his other opponents. And on the Republican side, Ron DeSantis, a congressman from just south of Jacksonville, won the primary after he was endorsed by Donald Trump and essentially made the Republican primary a referendum on what Republican primary voters think about the president. And as we know and have talked about before, President Trump has about an 85 to 90% approval rating among Republican primary voters. And that's part of the reason why we've seen all summer in Republican primaries that a contest to see who loves Trump the most.
How far apart are these two men politically?
They're about as far apart as you can go. Ron DeSantis is... all in for Donald Trump. In one of his TV ads, he showed his toddler daughter building a wall out of toy blocks. And Andrew Gillum's ads called for impeaching President Trump. DeSantis has called for eliminating, and he's in fact voted to repeal the Affordable Care Act, while Gillum is for Bernie Sanders-style Medicare for All. Gillum is for banning assault weapons, and DeSantis has an A rating from the NRA. Sort of issue by issue, these guys are at each party's political extreme. And to be fair, they had been participating in primaries where they were appealing to members of their respective parties. Florida doesn't allow independents to vote in party primaries, so there wasn't any middle for them to talk to. But given the profiles that each one of them has sketched out over the course of the last year, there's not much room for them to move back to the middle to try to appeal to, a third to 40% of the Florida electorate that considers themselves independents. And a lot of those folks are truly, truly moderate voters who are going to have a choice between, their only choice is going to be between the political extremes.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Reed Epstein. He's written a piece about the Florida governor's race and how it's a major test of the Democratic and Republican party bases. That was reflected, I think, in the enthusiasm from the primary voters, right?
Yeah, and Democrats in Florida had a pretty significant turnout. If you look, it can be difficult to compare like year to year turnout, especially in a state like Florida, where it's so transient and growing so fast. But the one good way to look at it is about 88% of the number of Democrats who voted in the 2016 presidential primary, which of course was a significant political event in Florida on both parties. Democrats turned out about 88% of their voters from the 2016 primary between Clinton and Sanders in Tuesday's race for governor. Republicans turned out about 60% of their voters from the 2016 primary, which was Trump, Marco Rubio, and others in Florida. And so by that measure, Democrats are significantly more motivated to come out and vote in Florida, as we've seen in a lot of other states during this primary season.
Boy, has Florida seen anything like this before?
Florida has never nominated an African-American candidate for governor from either party. And on the Democratic side, Florida Democrats typically nominate sort of middle-of-the-road centrist candidates who they think can appeal to folks in the middle and moderate Republicans. Of course, that hasn't worked in the last two elections when Governor Rick Scott won narrow victories in 2010 and 2014. So by nominating Andrew Gillum, it's a real shift sort of in strategy Florida Democrats are undertaking. And it'll be a real test to see whether there are more votes to be gained by Democrat by appealing to the left of the party and the base of the party and people who maybe haven't been traditional voters in the past than there are by winning over moderate Republicans and folks in the middle.
All right, we'll be watching. Thanks, Reed. Wall Street Journal politics reporter Reed Epstein. 20 minutes after the hour now, Rasa Kay is here with more of America's First News.
Well, Mike, a Greyhound bus with almost 50 people on board collided with a tractor-trailer head-on I-40 in New Mexico near the Arizona border, shearing off the front end and scattering debris across the highway. At least seven people are dead, several others hurt. Val Thomas is hoping to find her mother, Sadie, who was on the bus.
It's just really, really, really hard. So, and I haven't told my kids anything. They don't know. I'm just trying to keep it, not so intense on them because, we really don't know anything yet.
Investigators believe the tractor-trailer crossed the median. 10 people were injured after an explosion collapsed the roof at a Chicago water reclamation plant on the city's far south side. Investigators are trying to determine whether the blast was caused by a buildup of methane, a byproduct of the water treatment process. A mixed market turned lower on a report that President Trump could slap tariffs on a further $200 billion in Chinese imports as soon as the public comment period ends next week, a major escalation in the China trade war. The U.S. has imposed Trump tariffs on $50 billion worth of Chinese goods already, with Beijing retaliating dollar for dollar. A Florida man is dead after a road rage incident police are calling a classic stand your ground case. A man described as an explosive stalker threatened to shoot an Uber driver. Jason Bogue thought the driver had his girlfriend in the car. That driver, Robert Westlake, is a licensed armed security guard who holds a concealed weapons permit. He fired once, killing Bogue early Tuesday. Polk County Sheriff Grady Judd.
Here's a message for the hotheads. Don't do that stuff. Good people carry guns, and they will shoot you.
Judd calls it, in his words, justifiable homicide all day long. An Ohio State University trustee who thought football coach Urban Meyer deserved more than a three-game suspension says he was alone in pushing for the stiffer penalty. Former board chairman Jeffrey Wadsworth resigned over it. Ohio State's investigation found Meyer and athletic director Gene Smith tolerated bad behavior for years from a now-fired assistant coach accused of but not charged with domestic violence. Shore Packaging of Illinois crunched Google searches and census estimates to find which cities are hardest hit by porch pirates, people who brazenly steal packages delivered to online shoppers before they bring them inside. San Francisco, number one city where Amazon package stolen is most Googled per capita. Seattle's number two, with Minneapolis, Boston, and Portland, Oregon rounding out the top five.
And we know this is a big problem, but how would you like to be the porch pirate who steals a box, opens it up, and it's like a box of cereal or something like that, or like a bag of doorstops or something like that? Is it worth, going to jail over something like that is basically what I'm getting at.
Seriously, the cereal you can eat, but yeah.
Not so much on the doorstops. Thanks very much, Rasa. 23 minutes after the hour now on This Morning, America's First News. Coming up next, can you make a Frappuccino healthy?
Yeah, in the last couple of years, the sales of the Frappuccino have slowed and then turned negative in the last year through May. And Starbucks could see that health trends were moving in a different direction and decided a couple of years ago to start reformulating the Frappuccino to make it a bit healthier. And it's been a long process in which they have tried numerous things to try to make sure that the Frappuccino still has the same smooth, creamy texture that people enjoy in the drink and that it tastes good with less sugar and with fewer calories. So they had to do a lot of testing, testing more than 20 different types of sweet cream and 70 different vanilla flavorings to come up with something that still had the same sort of texture and flavor that people were accustomed to.
So we know a lot of us don't really pay attention. Just how much sugar and how many calories are in a traditional Frappuccino?
So a 16-ounce mocha Frappuccino, for example, contains 410 calories. And if you want to compare that to something you're familiar with, that it's a lot more calories than you would find in a standard size Snickers bar, which has 250 calories. And in addition, it has more than twice the amount of sugar as you would find in a Snickers bar. So it's really like drinking a milkshake or drinking a candy bar.
I found myself in Starbucks a little more this summer. I've had a few Frappuccinos myself, but aware of how many calories they contain, I sort of treated it as a treat or a dessert. Is that the problem here, that people don't want to drink their desserts necessarily? They'd rather save those calories for something else?
That might be part of it. I talked to some consumers this week in local Starbucks, and you know, one person said that when she has a cheat day every week, she turns to cookies primarily, or maybe a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. I mean, everybody's got a different idea of what a treat means, but I think you're right that there are people who, when they do want to indulge, they want to chew something rather than drink it. So that might be part of the problem. And I think there are a lot of people who just don't want to indulge that much at all anymore, and just really trying to be healthier and steer clear of high-calorie drinks like that.
All right, thanks very much, Julie. Wall Street Journal reporter Julie Jargon joining us from Chicago, coming up on 30 minutes now after the hour. You're listening to This Morning, America's First News.
There's nothing small about your business. Your passion, your hours, your reputation, it's all huge. Your partnerships, even bigger. With Dell Small Business Technology Advisors, you'll get the tech, advice, and one-on-one partnership to help your business grow. Because with reliable Dell PCs with Intel Core processors, you can focus on what matters most, getting business done. Call 877-BUY-DELL to speak with an advisor today. That's 877-BUY-DELL.
When a state ranks among the top 10 in the country for major new and expanded facilities, that's pure growth. When it's tops for four straight years, that's pure Michigan. Long known as a world leader in the automotive industry, Michigan is also a leader in advanced manufacturing, cybersecurity, agribusiness, and aerospace. In fact, CNBC rates Michigan as the most improved state for business. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
34 minutes after the hour, Gordon Deal is off. I'm Mike Gavin sitting in on this Friday, the 31st day of August, Labor Day getaway day. Here are some of the headlines we're following for you this morning. The death toll is expected to rise in the aftermath of a horrific crash on Interstate 40 in New Mexico. Tributes and memorial services for Senator John McCain will continue in Washington, D.C. today. President Trump canceled pay raises for federal workers, citing budget concerns. Meanwhile, at a campaign rally in Indiana, the president called on the FBI and Department of Justice to start doing their jobs. Central Florida keeps rolling, posting a 39-point win on college football's opening night. A thirsty fan who caught Giancarlo Stanton's 300th home run traded it with this slugger for a slew of goodies, including two Bud Lights and the Marvel superheroes that came together to cheer up a teenager with cancer. That story in about 20 minutes. This portion of the program is sponsored by Salon Paws Lidocaine Plus Pain Relievers. Well, if you've ever found yourself having difficulty fitting into an airplane bathroom recently, you're not alone. And don't worry, it's not because you're getting bigger. The bathroom is getting smaller, causing all kinds of problems for travelers up to and including just holding it in. More on the incredible shrinking lavatories from our own Gordon Deal.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal travel columnist Scott McCartney about his piece entitled, "You're Not Getting Bigger, the Airplane Bathroom is Getting Smaller." I guess no surprise here. What'd you find? What's going on?
Well, it's interesting. This has been going on for a while, although I think it's really picked up in the last year or two as more new airplanes have been delivered with newer slim labs, if you will. Shrinking the lavatory, the bathroom, can save about 7 inches of space or so, and that's based on our own measurements, because the industry actually won't disclose dimensions of the bathrooms. To fit more seats in, airlines are squeezing everything they can down, and people are getting more and more upset about it, I think.
How do they make seats bigger by saving 7 inches on a smaller bathroom?
Well, it's a combination of things. So if you save 7 inches on the bathroom in the front of the airplane, 7 inches on the bathroom in the back, that's 14 inches, and you're halfway to a row of with the 28-inch seat pitch. That's what you'd find on Spirit or so. Now, you have to also shrink the galley, which they're doing, you squeeze the seats tighter together, take out the closets, things like that, that can free up additional space. But it gets you a long way to an extra row on a narrow-body airplane. And over the life of the airplane, one extra row can give you, be worth tens of millions of dollars in revenue. It adds up quickly. For the bigger airlines, the other thing they're doing is 7 inches allows you to more or less add turn two rows into extra legroom rows. And those extra legroom rows are certainly favored by frequent flyers at elite levels that can get in those rows for free, but they sell them as well, so that's added revenue. So you could if you want to add 3 inches of space to a couple rows, just put in a smaller lav.
Jeez. I mean, I'm a very average size. I've flown a couple of times this summer, and even I noticed, like, I almost have to, like, do like a pirouette just to turn around. Yeah. Like, you can't use both feet to even turn around in the bathroom.
Yeah, no, that's one of the things a lot of people complain about, turning around. And, as everything has shrunk, it's not just sort of the open space. The sink has shrunk. I think they're sort of more one-handed sinks. The new bathrooms on the American 737 MAX airplane, which went into service earlier this year, it's actually the same bathroom that Southwest is using, Delta is using, and others. American had the water pressure was turned up pretty high, and people were complaining that the sink was so small that as soon as they hit the water, it came flying out all over them, splashed people. Now, they think they fixed that by turning down the water pressure, but it just shows you how small things are inside that space.
The rise of the one-handed sink. Unbelievable. Wall Street Journal travel columnist Scott McCartney with our own Gordon Deal. 21 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Coming up next, the problem with exposed shirt tails in the office. To tuck or not to tuck? The answer to that question for men is increasingly, let your shirt tails fly, and that is creating a considerably more casual workplace than we saw just a few years ago. Wall Street Journal men's fashion editor Jacob Gallagher has noticed and is certainly not pleased with it. His latest column is called Please, Men of the World, Tuck in Your Shirts. He joins us now to explain. Jacob, how long has this move toward untucked shirts been trending?
I think this has been trending now for coming on, I would speculate, really 15 years would be my guess, to somewhere between 10 and 15 years. And I think that, first it was seen, obviously, as with many clothing trends, it was seen in urban climes and, it was seen in cities. And I think it has spread. And I think that part of that spread has been spurred by the development in the founding of companies such as Untuckit in particular, really, that produce a garment that is specifically worn to be untucked. Companies then like J. Crew, Gap, I believe Banana Republic, a few others have responded in kind and have produced their own variations of shirts that are, so-called untucked shirts, shirts that are designed to be worn in this manner. And I think that offering that product has kind of given men a, greater understanding that this is out there and has thus helped to spread this trend.
Are there certain types of industries or types of offices that are more likely to be untucked or be too casual?
Well, that's the thing, is that I think that this is a trend that, obviously we always say with, there's always a caveat somewhere in my stories when talking about what men are wearing in the office, that of course there are still places where men wear suits to work. There are still places that require men to tuck in their shirts. But I think really anywhere that the dress code is a little bit more liberal or kind of allows for men to make a choice with what they're wearing, you will see guys with their shirts untucked. And that can really be anywhere. You know, it's funny, a lot of the time I'll speak to guys that work in finance or work in, you know, law or places that are, you know, you would think would have a more traditional dress code. And some of them certainly still do, but a lot of them are now finding that their dress code is a little bit more ambiguous and a little bit more relaxed.
Do you think that men by nature are more likely to be too casual in the workplace? You quoted one author who said that the untucked shirts, quote, justify men's worst lazy instincts.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that within my writing and with, you know, particularly, again, when I cover anything that has to do with what men are wearing to the office, it is really remarkable how far we have come in regards to corporate dress codes and how quickly they are deteriorating, for lack of a better word. I wouldn't pass judgment and say that, you know, men are too casual. I think that that's kind of a hard thing to measure in the sense of, you know, what is formal, what is casual, what impact does that have on the workplace? I would simply remark upon the fact that we have gotten to a place where what men wear in the office is extraordinarily casual and is, you know, something that is kind of choose your own adventure. You know, men do have a lot more freedom, and I think that the freedom is a good thing. What I don't think is quite a good thing is that it has led to a lot of men not necessarily caring about their appearance. Like, I think that there are ways to be casual, there are ways to feel relaxed and still look quite good. I think that too often men do make that leap between, oh, I can dress casual, and then subsequently they just dress poorly. They just dress in a manner that is slovenly.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal men's fashion editor Jacob Gallagher. So, Jacob, why don't you talk about the French tuck and how you think this could be a way for us to meet halfway, maybe?
I'll be honest, I kind of threw that in there in the article as a concession to men who, you know, might think, oh, how can I put my shirt tails back in my pants? You know, this seems like a step too far, you know, quote unquote, backwards to them. And I think that the French tuck, you know, at least if you're securing your shirt a little bit, it does help eliminate those wrinkles. It does kind of help you look like you've put, you know, 0.2 more seconds into what you're wearing, which is kind of the whole point. And I think that that look does, in my opinion, look better. I think that it can, you know, to be totally honest, it can look a little contrived at times, depending. You know, the goal is to never look like you're putting too much effort into things, but you should look like you put some effort into, you know, your appearance before you left the house.
And thanks, Jacob. Wall Street Journal men's fashion editor Jacob Gallagher. Full disclosure, by the way, after reading Jacob's column yesterday, I wound up taking a second look in the mirror and tucking in my previously untucked shirt during a bathroom break. Today, fully untucked for Casual Friday. In case you're keeping score at home, 13 minutes in front of the hour now. On This Morning, America's First News. Gordon's off. I'm Mike Gavin. Gordon taking the morning off after announcing fourth-string wide receivers score touchdowns during the Giants-Patriots preseason game last night. We're about 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Rossi K has returned with more of America's First News.
Well, Mike, Arizona Cardinals wide receiver Larry Fitzgerald was one of many sharing heartfelt personal memories of Senator John McCain at a memorial service in Phoenix.
I'm thankful that through these moments, the opportunity that we had to share our lives, and more importantly, our stories. While from very different worlds, we developed a meaningful friendship.
McCain lies in state at the Capitol Rotunda in Washington, D.C. today. Tomorrow, Armed Forces body bearers will carry his body to the National Cathedral with a stop at the Vietnam War Memorial, where McCain's family will lay a wreath. McCain's children and former presidents George W. Bush and Barack Obama will speak at the cathedral at McCain's specific request. Dozens of pink Cadillac owners will pay a special tribute to Aretha Franklin by lining up their cars in Detroit for her funeral today. LeBron James will be in the front row at Greater Grace Temple, where Smokey Robinson and President Bill Clinton will share their memories of the Queen of Soul as well. Utah Senator Orrin Hatch is urging the Federal Trade Commission to reopen an investigation into Google and its practices in online search and digital advertising. Conservative Republicans are concerned that conservative voices are being silenced online. President Trump addressed that at a Make America Great Again rally in Evansville, Indiana.
That we as a country cannot tolerate political censorship, blacklisting, and rigged search results. And you know, it can go the other way also.
In a letter to congressional leaders, Trump says he's canceling the 2.1 pay increase for civilian federal employees that was set to take effect in 2019, citing the significant cost of employing federal workers and budgetary concerns. Microsoft's requiring all of its U.S.-based suppliers and vendors with more than 50 employees to offer paid parental leave. The company has more than 1,000 partners in the U.S. Microsoft's home state of Washington's enacted paid parental leave that will go into effect in 2020. The Georgia Department of Public Health blames mosquito bites for the deaths of two people and six illnesses this season. West Nile virus responsible for one of the deaths, and the rare eastern equine encephalitis claimed one life. There are only a few reported cases of that a year in the U.S. And for the first time in its 63-year history, guests will be able to enjoy an alcoholic beverage inside Disneyland outside of the secretive invite-only Club 33 hidden in New Orleans Square. The Disney Parks blog says the new Star Wars Galaxy's Edge Park section will have its very own watering hole, Olga's Cantina, when it opens next year.
Continuing a trend that was started in the Florida parks recently, opening up the alcoholic offerings. As someone who visits Disney every once in a while, I welcome this change.
Do you now?
Yes. Of course, all it takes is one drunk dad to ruin it for everybody.
Uh-huh.
So let's all keep that in mind, folks. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. America's First News. Well, some of your favorite Marvel superheroes are teaming up, not to defeat their arch nemesis Thanos, but to brighten the day of a young fan with cancer. According to USA Today, the actors behind the masks, including the likes of Ryan Reynolds, Chris Evans, and Chris Pratt, answered Donna Rigby's plea to send words of encouragement to her terminally ill son, Josh Rigby. According to the family's GoFundMe page, the 17-year-old Australian native battled leukemia since he was 5 and was diagnosed at 15 with glioblastoma, the same form of brain cancer that Senator John McCain died from on Saturday. Over the past week, celebrities flipped the script on Josh, calling him their hero. Reynolds, who dubbed himself Uncle Deadpool, told the teen in a video he is thinking of him.
After hearing about you and hearing about your story and everything that you're going through, you know, I think it's pretty much a fact that you have more courage and more strength in your pinky finger than any superhero does in their entire body.
Pratt also joined in and sent a video message along with Spider-Man Homecoming star Tom Holland. And for good measure, Hugh Jackman, a.k.a. Wolverine, chimed in, encouraging Josh to stay strong like the mutant he plays in X-Men, saying, "I'm sending you lots of positive thoughts. Keep fighting." That's a wrap on this hour. For Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshanka, and Rasa Kay, I'm Mike Gavin. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.